From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made last night, all across New York State, when the polls closed and the voters gave massive victories to Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. For many years, New York voters have felt like their voices have not mattered in the primary process. This year, New York voters had the chance to either fuel the underdogs or to help clinch the nominations for the frontrunners, and they did the latter. For Donald Trump, it was a big enough win that he is potentially back on path for the 1,237 delegates he needs to clinch the Republican Party's nomination before getting to that convention in Ohio this summer. For those who dream of an open convention, New York voters struck a blow to that idea. On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders said many times he thought he could win New York State outright and continue that recent winning streak. He failed to do that, and now Hillary Clinton's lead looks very secure. This hour, we explore the impact of our state's primary with an eye on where the candidates go next. And my first guest is a man and voice you know very well. If you listen to NPR, you know Ken Rudin's political junkie, and Ken is on the line with us. Ken, always nice to talk to you, sir. How are you?
Great, and it's great to be on WXXI.
Well, Ken, last night, let's start on the Republican side. We knew Donald Trump was going to win this state. We didn't know how big he was going to win. He dominated this state. Any surprise at all to you?
Yeah, that's the big surprise. I hate the word huge because he's made a mockery of it, but we all knew he would win. This is his home state. Ted Cruz doesn't do well in the East, especially after his attack on New York values and John Kasich. Well, I don't know where he is. I mean, he doesn't have much of a campaign operation. But the point is, we knew he would win, but not by the massive margins he won. He carried everything. He carried women. He carried every demographic. He may have won 88 or 89 of the 95 delegates. Ted Cruz, who's supposed to be the closest competitor for the nomination, finished a poor third and got no delegates. I think John Kasich got three by winning Manhattan, which was kind of interesting, but a total domination for Donald Trump.
That is, by the way, that's sort of a curiosity in what was definitely a big night for Trump. But he did say in his victory speech that those who know him best supported him most, and yet the only little slice of New York he lost is the actual place he lives. That was sort of interesting.
Well, you know, those limousine liberals, as Spiro Agnew used to talk about New Yorkers, they're the ones who voted for John Kasich, who somehow is being portrayed as a moderate, but I guess again with Ted Cruz and Donald Trump, maybe he is the moderate in the race.
Interesting, he did say to our colleague Adam Chodak from WROC-TV in a Monday interview, he said he does not consider himself a moderate, even though others have slapped that tag on him, and you seem to be saying, Ken, that's accurate. He's not a moderate.
Oh, no, he's not a moderate at all. Matter of fact, if you talk to Democrats in Ohio, they'll say he's just very far right. But, of course, he does talk about compassionate conservatism, which George W. Bush made popular in 2000. He does talk about, you know, helping the needy, which is not a very popular slogan or platform for the Republicans. So, look, Kasich is also not yelling. He's not screaming. And I guess if you're not yelling and screaming, you must be a moderate.
We're talking to Ken Rudin of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie for our first half hour. We're wrapping the primary for the entire hour, but listeners, if you want to get in with a question or comment for Ken, you can do that by calling the program toll-free. It's 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Ken, I haven't seen all of the updated math, but certainly getting between 88 and 92 delegates for Trump, nearly sweeping, gets him a much better chance to get to 1237 before the convention. Does he have to get to 1237 to be the nominee in your eyes?
Well, I do. I mean, just like you need 270 electoral votes to be elected president, just as you need four victories in the World Series to be the World Series champion, you need 1237. I mean, that's the rules. It's always interesting to me to watch Donald Trump talk about a rigged and corrupt system. This is the way they've been allotting delegates for the longest time. I think the reason people don't realize it or don't pay attention to it is, for the most part, the nominations are locked up pretty early. The fact that we're still talking about New York playing a major role in the primary, I mean, New York was always this ATM machine that they just gave money to candidates, but their primary never mattered. So I mean, it's going on longer than anybody expected. This is the way of the game. This is the way the game is played. Donald Trump really should not be complaining about a rigged system, considering the fact that he is, he has a huge, huge here we go again, huge lead over his competitors. But having said that, you need 1,237 to be nominated. And if he doesn't get 1,237 after the first ballot, we theoretically, at least, there's still going to be a contest for the nomination.
Do you expect him now to get to 1,237 by the Cleveland Convention, Ken?
Well, you know something, I mean, New York was much bigger than anybody expected. I expect the five states that are up for grabs next Tuesday, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, Connecticut, Delaware, and Maryland, will also be very good news for Trump, certainly bad news for Cruz. So that could move him along as well. Although, having said that, I should note that Pennsylvania delegates, most of them go to the convention uncommitted, and that's the word that Ted Cruz and John Kasich supporters love, that word, uncommitted. But look, he could do it theoretically. He could do it. There is some saying that if he does have this new momentum, maybe a very attractive looking poll in California that shows Trump with a big lead as well. So theoretically, sure, he can do it. I know we were talking a lot about contested conventions, open conventions, and you know, if you're a political junkie, you know that no Republican convention has gone past the first ballot since 1948. We're dying for excitement, but either way, I think you're going to see excitement in Cleveland.
Kasich has said that if Trump can't win by the rules getting to 1237 before the convention, it should be anyone's game. Do you buy that, and will the voters buy that?
Well, but you know something, that's a very good, the way you put that is a very good point, Evan, because do I buy it? Yes, I think rules should be followed. But having said that, I mean, I can imagine the ire of Trump supporters if they show up in Cleveland and he has maybe, let's see, he has 1,100 delegates, far more than Cruz or Kasich, and he doesn't get the nomination. Well, you know, Trump has hinted about violence. There could be a revolt. There could be a very angry, confrontation going on in Cleveland. But at the same time, for John Kasich to say, "Hi, I should be your nominee. I should be your nominee because I carried Ohio." Well, I think there are, the last I counted, there were like 49 other states, and he's lost. He may lose every other one. So look, this is going to be a battle. This is going to be you need to get a certain number, but the Trump supporters will still say it's rigged if he doesn't get it on the first ballot.
Now, Donald Trump last night in a pretty short victory speech, he was kind of low-key. He didn't rip his opponents. In fact, the only ones he really ripped were the media, again. And I guess that's a winning line. It's kind of a laugh line or an applause line. But, Ken, does that get old to you?
No, nothing about Donald Trump gets old to me. But a lot of people did make a point of noticing that he didn't talk about Lion Ted. He talked about, not the Lion King, but Lion Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
He talked about Senator Cruz. He talked about Governor Kasich. There's new management at the top of the Trump campaign led by Paul Manafort, an old-time Republican operative who maybe is trying to put some stability and some maturity into Trump's campaign, but who knows how long that'll last. But I did notice, though, that it was a very short and very sweet and very almost presidential-sounding victory speech. The only sad thing about that is that the less time you hear Donald Trump, the more you hear Wolf Blitzer on CNN. So that was my big problem.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Talking to Ken Rudin of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie. And, you know, Trump can rip the media all he wants. Ken, I think he is very fortunate that the news media is not more aggressively fact-checking his claim that he made in Buffalo on Monday night that he helped on 9/11 clear some of the rubble. I had never heard him say that. He said that in his big rally in Buffalo Monday night, and he was more mocked for it. But, you know, I'm trying to imagine if anybody else said, if Hillary Clinton said that, she would be aggressively fact-checked on that. Why is the media not interested in fact-checking that claim?
You know something, first of all, it's an interesting question, but I don't think, I mean, there are two roles the media have played in the Trump rise. First of all, you know, wherever he talks, they cover him no matter what he does. If Meet the Press or Face the Nation can't get him live, they'll get him on the phone. If they can't get him on the phone, they'll get him by carrier pigeon. They don't care because they know the ratings are great. But having said that, I think a lot of the coverage is investigative and questioning and fact-checking. So I kind of think that while Donald Trump is always forever on the airs, no matter wherever you turn on the TV, he's there, although not the last two Sundays. But I think there is a lot of fact-checking, and there's always a question about the things he's done. Of course, there was a lot of mockery this week when he talked about the tragic events of 7/11, and that got everybody rolling their eyes. But more importantly, I think that when he says things that are exaggerated or not true, I think the media have done a good job. But for the most part, his supporters say, well, the media is biased, and who cares?
Well, Donald Trump has, before we turn to the Democrats, and I'll grab a phone call in just a second here, he is going to have to, if he wants to win the general election, turn around some heavily underwater numbers with women voters. And Ken, you know, there is a well-documented list of comments he has made, from the flippant stuff that he says on Howard Stern to the stuff he has said in his own books, you know, saying that women who become mothers are not loyal employees because they've got some loyalty to home and to the baby, and that he doesn't want that. I mean, that's going to I would think that's going to be a hard hill for him to climb by the general. But, you know, as you said, he even won women in New York last night, didn't seem to have a problem with that. Do you think he can overcome those numbers, those negative numbers, with women voters?
Well, my gut tells me that he's going to have a big, big problem in November. I don't think any presidential candidate of either party has ever had such negatives going into a general election. But having said that, Evan, you make the point also that Hillary Clinton's negatives are high, too. She does very poorly among white men. She does considerably, you know, not nearly strong enough with white voters. Of course, she does very well with women, blacks and Latinos, yes. But she does have a lot of negatives. There are lingering questions about her honesty and credibility on many, many issues. So you have two candidates who are flawed, but I agree completely that I don't see how Donald Trump, given his history of, some people will call it misogyny, but the things he said about women in the past, I don't know how you turn that around in November, especially with a group that is the majority of the American people.
All right, let me grab a quick phone call here on the subject of the Republican Party before we turn to the Democrats. And this is John in Rochester. I'm with Ken Rudin. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Hey, Ken. Ken, you know, I'm a Cruz guy, but I'll tell you, in a way, I want to see Trump, because I'd like to see a Trump-Cruz ticket, and I think that would really work. But the reason I want Trump in there, because he's going to go after Hillary with guns blazing. I'm reading a book right now called Clinton's War on Women. And it's on. I can't believe some of the stuff in that book. If Trump uses, attacks Hillary with some of that ammunition from just some of the facts in that book, I'll tell you, I think he's going to win big. What are your thoughts?
John, is that the Roger Stone book?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know of the book, and look, the point is, a lot of what Roger Stone, of course, is a Trump supporter.
Right.
He can be very incendiary, like yep. Donald Trump. He said Roger Stone's last book was convinced that Lyndon Johnson engineered the assassination of John F. Kennedy. But having said that, look, there's a lot of stuff with Bill Clinton and his treatment of women, and every time Donald Trump is called out on his war on women, he will point to Bill Clinton's statements. The thing is, I think everybody knows about Bill Clinton and women. I think everybody knows about Donald Trump and women. And I almost think that almost everybody's minds are made up already. The question is not to get these undecided votes out in November. I think the question is whether you can get their base out. But I kind of think that, sure, he's going to run against Hillary Clinton, and he'll love running against Clinton, Hillary Clinton. The question is whether which one is more effective, his attacks on Clinton or her attacks on him.
Well, there's so much in that book that goes beyond women. It goes into drug Clinton's, not Hillary's drug use, but Bill's drug use. According to the book, he was heavily into cocaine, Bill Clinton. And I actually talked to Roger Stone on a radio show, and he said, listen, he goes, why haven't they come after me for slander and libel in this book if these facts or stories are not true?
Roger Stone has a history of these kind of sometimes outlandish statements, sometimes on the mark. But I mean, I suspect that if anybody wanted to fact check that book, you'll find some truth and some things that were beyond exaggeration.
Well, Ken Rudin, Ken Rudin's political junkie, joining us. And speaking of big wins, it was a big night for Hillary Clinton. And there's a headline in one of the headlines in Salon this morning is, for Bernie Sanders, it's now all about whining, not about winning anymore, and it's time to step aside. That's harsh, but his supporters won't want that to be the case. Do you think it is time for Sanders to leave the race?
Absolutely not. I mean, think of Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama in 2008. There were a lot of it when Barack Obama had won. I think he'd won at one point 13 contests in a row. And there were a lot of people saying that Hillary Clinton should drop out. And she said, well, no, I mean, I'm fighting for the nomination and one of us will win. I think the fact that Bernie Sanders, who until New York had won 7 in a row, 8 of the last 9 primaries and contests, including a big win in Wisconsin, the fact that he's outraised Hillary Clinton every month this year, the fact that he's still drawing huge crowds, and he still has issues that are moving the Democratic Party on income inequality and the behavior of Wall Street. I think the voters, not me and you and the pundits, should decide when Bernie Sanders should get out. I mean, look, he could very well have a disastrous next week in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, or he could start winning again as he had that streak that went on for the last couple of weeks. He could win in Indiana. He could win in West Virginia. So, look, let's not make the decision for him. I know there are some Democrats who really, especially Hillary Clinton Democrats, who want her to stop focusing on Bernie Sanders and spend all her attention on Donald Trump. But look, I mean, there's no reason Ted Cruz should drop out. There's no reason Bernie Sanders should drop out. Do I think Sanders could win the nomination? I don't. I think his only way of getting that far is to suddenly convince all these superdelegates that he has the strongest chance of winning in November. But I don't think that will happen. But look, you know, God bless him. He was 3% in the polls a year ago, as he likes to tell everybody. Let the voters decide. And, I mean, let's talk after California when his numbers may not improve. He still has to win like 70% of the remaining delegates. It's hard to make that case that he can do it, but let the voters have their say.
Ken, when it comes to party unification, just about every presidential contest, you hear strong supporters of whatever candidate it is say, you know, this is my candidate, and I don't know if I can support, you know, X, Y, and Z if they're the nominee in November. And we're hearing that, particularly among Sanders supporters saying, I don't know if I can vote for Clinton. We're hearing that less from Clinton supporters about Sanders, more from Sanders supporters about Clinton. But, you know, you're a student of history more than just about anybody else on the politics scene here. Do you expect unification in November, no matter who the candidate is?
I do. I noticed that Hillary Clinton, one of the first things she said in last night's victory speech was that there are fewer differences between Bernie Sanders and myself that people realize. And look, I know the Sanders people are angry. They hate the fact, like, Bernie Sanders will win 62% of the vote in New Hampshire, but come away with same amount of delegates because of the superdelegates. He's not happy about that. He's not happy that New York had a deadline of October 9th. To decide to change parties if an independent wanted to vote in the Democratic primary. Now, that's a fault of the Sanders organization that they didn't push that earlier, but there's some rules and laws and party things that are not pleasing to Sanders supporters. But it reminds me, I mean, the best example I can think of is Hubert Humphrey and Eugene McCarthy in 1968. Hubert Humphrey didn't enter a primary, let alone win a primary, and he won the nomination at that ugly Chicago convention. And McCarthy supporters said, no way in the world are we going to come over to Humphrey. They started to belatedly in September and October, and Humphrey just lost by a whisker to Richard Nixon. Let's see what happens. We're still in April. Let's see if the anger that Sanders supporters have towards Hillary Clinton will sustain that long.
And I'm hearing from Clinton supporters who say that their concern is that now that we're past New York and that the Sanders campaign did not pull off the upset victory to keep the winning streak going, their concern is that at this point forward, it starts to be about hurting Clinton, that this doesn't help her become a sharper candidate, even more well-vetted, more ready to deal with the general election, that from here on out, attacks on her by Bernie Sanders and his supporters hurt her, and that it is detrimental to the efforts to defeat Donald Trump in November. Yes or no?
I think the attacks on Hillary Clinton do hurt. The attacks on anybody intra-party do hurt. But I still think that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama going all the way to June in 2008 made both candidates better candidates, especially Barack Obama. I thought he was a better candidate for that challenge. I think Hillary Clinton can be a better candidate, but again, as we saw in last Thursday's debate, it can get personal, it can get contentious, it can get sarcastic. That never helps a party, a candidate in the end. But ultimately, I think this campaign that going on beyond New York does not necessarily hurt Hillary Clinton.
Ken, it probably takes a lot to surprise you in American politics with all that you have seen. What has surprised you most about this campaign season?
Well, look, I was one of those smart-alecky analysts who said that Donald Trump is a fad, a fashion, just some entertainment figure who's going to fade once the voters have their say. I am surprised that given all the things he has said, all the things people that have said about him and what goes on at his rallies, I'm surprised that the bad guys are the party establishment, and the good guys are the independent, outsider Trump people. The thought that Jeb Bush, with his $102 million campaign kitty, was just routed in the primaries and caucuses and dismissed so early, and the Marco Rubios, who the polls show had the best chance of beating Hillary Clinton, they were knocked out. The fact that the Republicans wind up with Ted Cruz, who is not Mr. Beloved, with Donald Trump, who has all these contradictions, especially giving money to Democrats and liberals and switching positions on so many things, and John Kasich, who barely made it on the stage after the first debate because his numbers were so low. That's the choice for the Republicans. That's remarkable. It's also remarkable, having said that, that Bernie Sanders, again, having come from 3% in the polls, I thought this was a cakewalk for Hillary Clinton. It has not proven to be so. And ultimately, it may be a clear Hillary Clinton win in the Philadelphia convention, but Bernie Sanders is hanging around much longer than I thought he could.
Ken, before I let you go then, you mentioned the different positions Donald Trump has taken on issues over the years. And for listeners, even Trump supporters, Ken's right. I mean, just about every major issue you could pick. Every single issue. You could pick taxes, you could pick abortion, social issues, policy issues. He has been on basically all sides of them throughout his career. And so here's what I'm kind of wondering, Ken. Trump is, his supporters will tell you that he is pro-America and that he tells it like it is. How do you convince voters that you tell it like it is when you have basically taken every position on every major issue?
You know something? I don't think people care about that. I mean,
I don't think they do either.
It drives me nuts. And I would think that ideologues and committed conservatives like National Review and others like that, it does matter to people like them. But all they know is that they see beheadings around the world. They see jobs being lost. They see terror in San Bernardino, which is close to home, and they see ISIS going, you know, whatever ISIS is doing in the Middle East. And Donald Trump says, I'll stop it. I'll build a wall. I'll bomb them. I'll talk about nuclear weapons. And they say, let's go for it. Let's do it because nothing is working. I think there's just a feeling of frustration and hopelessness that is helping Trump just rise in the polls and get the vote. So, you know, I've been wrong before, but boy, I don't think I've ever been as wrong as I have this year.
Yeah, but maybe it's a messaging thing. You wonder why it kind of reminds me after the Democrats passed Obamacare, and then they sort of put their tail between their legs and said to the voters, well, I'm really sorry. And they didn't really defend it full-throatedly, and they got rocked in the midterm elections by the Republicans.
Let me just do the contrary thing. The Republicans were elected, they took the House in 2010, they took the House and the Senate in 2014, and they said, elect us, we'll get rid of Obamacare. And you know what? We have Mitch McConnell as majority leader, and we have Paul Ryan and John Boehner before that as House Speaker, and we still have Obamacare. Now, the dirty little secret is we'll always have Obamacare as long as you have a guy named Obama in the White House. But these Republicans promised voters that there would be big change. A lot of these voters did not see the change, and they're angry at the status quo.
Sure. But I'm just wondering if Democrats do a poor job defending what they have either put into policy or what they've done. I mean, Barack Obama's got to be sitting in the White House going, yes, ISIS is a problem. We also haven't had another Twin Towers scale attack in this country. We also have employment, you know, unemployment down around 5% when it was at 10. We have the Dow at 18,000 points, and everyone's saying that this is the worst things have ever been. Well, certainly wage stagnation's a problem. But you don't see a whole lot of people saying, is it as bad as you think? Which is sort of strange to me in some ways. But
I understand your point, but Bernie Sanders will make the case that the rich have gotten richer,
yeah.
The poor have gotten poorer in the last 7 years.
And he's right.
And, of course, the last 30 years. But the point is, it's not as rosy as the Democrats would like to portray it.
Yeah.
It's not as awful as the Democrats, as the Republicans like to say it, see it. But clearly, there's a lot that needs to be done, and there's a lot of frustration out there on both sides.
Ken Rudin's political junkie. Ken Rudin, great talking to you. Thanks for sharing the time with the program today, and we're always enjoying the conversation with you, sir.
Evan, I loved it. Thanks so much.
All right, that's Ken Rudin. Let's get a short break. We're going to continue the conversation with some local analysis on what we saw last night in New York State's primary with Trump and Clinton winning big. If you voted yesterday, maybe if you couldn't vote yesterday, we're going to talk about an open primary. Bernie Sanders saying that New York State will have to change its rules and open up the primary. He called it unfair. I wonder if you agree with that. We'd love to hear from you. You can call the program toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, 263-9994. Back in just a moment. Coming up in our second hour, can you be an environmentalist if you eat meat? In other words, you have to go vegan if you want to truly be an environmentalist. Well, supporters of the documentary called Cowspiracy say you cannot be an environmentalist if you eat meat. They say the film proves why. They say cows and livestock are the biggest threat to our climate. We're going to talk to the filmmaker and the local chapter of the Sierra Club next hour.
For new parents, a baby can demolish the family's budget. But the baby doesn't have to wreck the foundation of the family. Parents should be a priority, too.
Don't forget yourselves. You are maybe more important than she is, at least for 10 years to come.
The big questions of money and your life later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on WXXI.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. In studio with us now are Sean Sutton, chair of the Department of Political Science at RIT. Sean, welcome.
Good to be here.
And Tim Nealon's here, chair of the Department of History and Political Science at Nazareth College. Tim, nice to see you as well.
Great to be here.
All right. Well, I see the phone ringing already because we asked listeners, do you think the process was fair? And Sean Sutton, Bernie Sanders supporters, we heard from a number of them yesterday who said, I didn't know I wasn't going to be able to vote. And some of that is sort of, again, civics lessons. As Tim Nealon always says, we've got to be better civically educated. Some of that's the media, though I can point to stories that we did around registration deadlines. But some of the Sanders supporters were frustrated, and Bernie Sanders said, New York's got to open this up. It can't be a closed primary. What do you make of that?
Look, I understand his frustration. He's done very well in open primaries up to this point. And it looked pretty clear that if it was just limited to Democrats, he was not going to win. I don't think it was a surprise. It might have been a little bit bigger, but in terms of whether or not it should be opened up, I don't know if the political parties would be open to that, for the simple reason that it means that insurgent candidates have a good shot at picking up a prize. And what we've seen is that the Republicans have two front runners that they're not happy with, and the Democrats have a candidate that is upsetting their establishment. So I could see that New York is probably going to stay closed. It may open up, or at least make clear when you should change your votes. But for the most part, I wouldn't be surprised that New York continues to stay closed. And whether or not that's a good thing, I think it comes down to the interests of the political parties. And I think that's what's going to drive this one.
Okay. Tim Nealon, I think certain things don't have to be mutually exclusive. You could say that closed primaries are not evil, but boy, it's hard. New York State makes it a little hard to vote here. Shouldn't we be able to register and get people in and eligible to vote much closer to the actual voting?
Absolutely. I think the idea that you're going to, before the general election in November, foreclose on anyone deciding to change their party after that election really does, it's meant to intimidate any challengers to the Orthodox establishment. And, the result is that Hillary won. But, here's the thing. Her victory here was very similar to her victory over Barack Obama in 2008. I mean, in some ways, it was a victory. It was an expectable victory. But, she won in the municipalities, and Bernie won in the counties. If you look at the map, I mean, he won. In fact, his vote mirrored Donald Trump's vote in the number of outside the municipalities and the insurgent interest in his message, particularly for people who are economically stressed. They feel disenfranchised. Now, New York State's got to take that seriously. I know the parties obviously can set their own rules, but let's face it, the parties are also our government. And they're the ones that have to decide what will appease most voters. And it may, in fact, infuse new life into their parties. A third of people in New York State are not registered in one of the major parties. So that's a pretty significant number.
I'm going to grab a phone call in just a second from someone who wants to share her family story on exactly that. But I want to ask as well, Tim, you know, for Clinton supporters who hear what you just said, they might feel like you're downplaying because she didn't just win. She dominated. She won a 16-point victory. And to them, they may hear what you're saying is sort of downplaying.
Well, you know, again, I'm an analyst, not a supporter of Clinton, Sanders, Trump, Kasich, or Cruz. And so when I look at her victory, I'm going, okay, yeah, that's a good victory. But it's mirrored what happened in 2008. And guess who got the nomination in 2008? Barack Obama. I'm interested to see what happens, you know, in the future. Not only did she win here in 08, but again, every establishment Democrat, the governor, all of the legislature, all of the leaders were out, you know, for her. So I would not downplay Sanders. And I guess my message would echo that of Ken Rudin's is Sanders shouldn't get out. I mean, Sanders should continue to see how this plays out. Again, I think his followers and people that might have supported, you know, the Democratic Party may feel a little bit, shall we say, unhappy right now. And they may be casting ballots for the Green Party down the line.
Let me grab Rachel in Rochester on that subject. Go ahead, Rachel.
Hi, yes. My name is Rachel. I'm from Hilton, and my mother is a registered Republican. A coworker of mine is a registered conservative, and I just thought it was interesting to hear from them. They were both not voting yesterday. My mother, none of the Republicans appealed to her, and she actually told me, because she came to vote with me, that she would have voted for Bernie Sanders if she could have yesterday. And my conservative coworker had actually echoed the same thing to me. So I just wish that there was a way we could see the numbers. If those people could have voted for Bernie, what would have happened, and you know what numbers would be showing a lot differently today.
How come they didn't get themselves in position to vote, even though the deadlines are kind of early in New York State, as Tim and Sean have been saying? How come they didn't get themselves in position to do that, Rachel?
I don't think that they were really aware of Bernie's message at the time that deadline approached. I've been a Bernie fan for a long time. I'm a big campaign finance reform junkie, so I knew all about it, and I made sure that I actually was registered as an independent, but I changed my registration before October 9th. But I know that there were plenty of people that, you know, hadn't heard of Bernie at that time, you know, last year, so... It's really a shame that the deadline is so far ahead of the actual vote.
Rachel, thanks for the phone call. Sean and Tim, Rachel seems to be making the point, or at least asking the question, if we could somehow know the voters who would have voted had it been open, would that have changed the outcome? I don't know if Sanders wins. Do you both agree that it would have been closer?
I do think it would be closer. Because Bernie brings in voters that are independents, younger voters who probably haven't registered one way or the other, in fact, jealously hold to their independent status. And I think that if they had a chance, it would have been closer.
Right.
The October deadline, I think, too, is way too early. Because I think at that stage, there would be a lot of Republicans who were thinking Donald Trump's not going to be around. And all of a sudden they're faced looking down the barrel at Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, two candidates that most party officials didn't want at all. So I think the October deadline is a problem. Perhaps definitely would have to be some more flexibility in that, a later time, so that people can actually see this race develop. But it would be closer.
And some of that can be done through legislation. I mean, the parties obviously set whether it's a primary or a caucus, but essentially our Board of Elections runs the election in a primary. So Senator Rich Funke, who is from this area, is I think he's head of the Election Committee on the Senate. That would certainly be a good place to send some of your ideas about how that would work out, and I'm sure he'd be very open to new ways of doing things, particularly after this. And I agree with Sean. I think it would have been more people. Look, Sanders does great in open primaries. I mean, in any time there's crossover votes, he does well. And I think it would have been certainly closer. I don't know that he would have won in her home state. If he had, that would have been a nasty message for Clinton. And then, you know, we'd be talking about a very different kind of election going forward. You know, we'd be talking Marco Rubio, right? So I don't think she would have lost, but I think it would have been closer, and I think it would have helped his message and his campaign going forward. But again, he should not walk away from this thinking, you know, I was beaten. He was beaten as badly as the president of the United States was beaten in 08, and he can take that. I think he should bring that message to his voters.
I'm seeing a lot of Clinton supporters who are saying that they think this amounts to Sanders supporters sort of crying over the rules. And here's Josh on Twitter. Let me read his comments. Josh said, imagine you had a 10-member book club, and I never went, but then I brought 10 of my friends to a leadership vote for your book club. Is that fair? Absolutely not. If you want to decide the leadership of the Democratic Party, register as a Democrat, period.
And that would be great, but in New York, when you want to register for, if you want to switch parties, again, you had to do it early October, before the race really began. And I think that's where I think Sean and I would agree that you know,
it's ridiculous. It does not foster people getting
challenging.
Involved in the process.
It's challenging in a way that most states don't make it challenging. But again, New York, look, I think a lot of the vote yesterday for Trump is because of this kind of political nonsense. The political class, you know, creating rules that the regular voters are just stymied by and they don't understand. 6 out of 10 voters said they want somebody from outside the establishment. And can you blame them when you've got Shelley Silver and Dean Skelos arrested? You've got the I-Square controversy. You've had a resignation there. Before that, we had Robitaille. I mean, if you live in Monroe County, you live in Erie County, you've seen local political corruption, and I'm not blasting Republicans and blasting all in the political class. And I think that's why Donald Trump did so well throughout. Although, again, his margins were smaller in the urban areas where there's suburban voters who voted for Kasich or maybe a couple for Cruz here and there.
Sean, when it comes to that claim that you join a party, you want to vote in a primary, get in a party. That's the argument that Clinton supporters are making. It's saying no apologies. Sorry, if you're an independent and you support Sanders, you should not have been able to vote yesterday. That's what Clinton supporters are saying. What do you make of that?
Look, I mostly agree with that, but the point is the October deadline is too early. It's at a time in which the primaries really haven't kicked off. It was at a time in which it was not clear how things were going. The Democrats actually had a couple of other candidates running at that time. I dare anyone to try to name them because who knows, right? And so you've got that point. So you've got to decide at that moment to choose a party. I think that's a problem. So yes, if you want to be part of the process, be part of a party, but let's not just say let's cut off the deadline as early as possible to make it really difficult for people to decide. Let them get involved.
Right. You have no love for Jim Webb. Yeah. No love.
I used to like Jim Webb, but it was pretty clear that he did not spend his time well outside of politics.
No, I'm saying, you know, people can't even remember who else was in this race, and he's largely right about that.
Right.
And before I jump back to the phones, real quick.
I would just say, again, in October, everyone was thinking about the general election, if they were thinking about elections at all. And again, it was an off-year, election, and most people didn't participate. So again, I look. You can't help but think, you know, this is a strategy by the party elite and both sides. You know, as they often do, three people in a room deciding, okay, let's cut it off so that, you know, they won't mess with your party, they won't mess with my party, and then, you know, oh well, we'll just say that's the way it is. But they'll take it because they're New Yorkers and they're used to taking it. Well, they may not be taking it anymore with Donald Trump, the victor last night for the Republicans.
All right, let me grab a couple of phone calls. This is John and Henrietta. Go ahead, John.
Hi, I just want to kind of comment about the whining that I'm hearing from Clinton supporters about Bernie sort of getting in the way of Hillary's coronation. You know, she's not entitled to the nomination simply because she's been a senator twice or secretary of state. She has to earn it along as anyone else running for public office has to, and I'm glad that Bernie's staying in. to hold her feet to the fire.
Well, I mean, I think Clinton supporters would probably say it's not that she's entitled. It's just that she is winning, you know, a lot more votes. And that at this point, she is almost a lock mathematically to get the nomination anyway. Is that wrong?
Well, I haven't really followed the math that closely, but I think that it's good. I agree with those who say that Bernie should stay in, even if he doesn't even have a chance, simply because he's raising issues that some of us are glad that he's raising.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for the phone call, okay. John. I think that's probably a lot of campaigns. You hear that sentiment that even if a candidate I support can't win, maybe they drive the conversation. And a lot of people feel that that's happening. Let's take a sampling on the Republican side. Bill in Spencerport has a story about what happened yesterday. Go ahead, Bill.
Hello, am I on, Evan?
Yes, you certainly okay. are, Bill. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not registered. I'm one of the third that don't get to vote in the primaries. But we had dinner last night with some friends. And she's a registered Republican, and she doesn't really like any of them. And she really doesn't like Donald Trump. That said, she voted for him. And her reason is that she thinks that either of the Democratic candidates would have a better chance of winning the general election against Trump than it would against somebody else. So I found that kind of interesting. I wonder how many people voted for Trump for the same reason.
Republicans, yeah. I don't think that's a very typical response by a Republican.
Like, make Donald Trump. Very typical.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. She might want to look at her party registration again, just because I have to say that's an unusual gambit. I think most people who voted for Trump who didn't like him, you know, may have held their nose or may have thought, you know, look, he's at least gonna win, and I might as well vote for the winner. And then, you know, some really believe that if Donald Trump is the candidate, he will make New York a potential battleground state. And so they're very excited about that potential and that possibility. Again, looking at the electoral map, though, there's more Democrats than Republicans in this state. And I'm not sure how many independents or even, you know, blue-collar Democrats Donald Trump can draw on. But it's certainly, I'm sure both parties would have to spend money in New York State in the fall if Donald Trump was the nominee.
I wonder, by the way, Sean, I mean, as Ken Rudin said in our first half hour, he was wrong about Trump. I've had to eat crow all kinds of times about Trump and how wrong I was just about a year ago, last June and July, when he was getting into the race. I thought it was a brand-building exercise and an unserious effort. I've been wrong about that. And so I make no more predictions. So Democrats who want to sort of monkey around with the results and try to ensure that Trump is the nominee, you know, we heard that in other states, people saying, I'm going to cross over and vote for Trump where I can, because I'd love to see him as the nominee in the general in the fall because he can't win. Is that playing with fire?
No, I don't think it's playing with fire.
You think he can't win?
I don't think he can win. I've been wrong in all my predictions, too. I thought he was unserious as well. Apparently, the Republican establishment were wrong, too, because they didn't open all guns on him early in the primaries. But I think that with the negatives that you have, that Donald Trump has, and then just basic electoral college math, if Donald Trump does as well as Mitt Romney, then what states is he going to turn that went Democrat last time his way? Florida's not enough. Virginia's not enough. You start counting up the numbers, it's going to be it's more significant than I think the Republicans really anticipate. Donald Trump, with his negatives, I think is going to be facing a difficult situation.
And I'm not saying it's not going to be Barry Goldwater in 1964. I'm not saying that. But on the other hand, this is the Donald Trump case. The Donald Trump case is this. Look, Republicans will have to come beside him. They will have to support Donald Trump going down the line, including Kasich from Ohio, who would no doubt support Donald Trump and his brand of politics and try to make Ohio in play. For Republicans, Ohio is always the major key anyway. Those 20 electoral votes are really swinging. Donald Trump has done very well with males, which Hillary Clinton does not. He does fairly well with independents. He will bring some Democrats into it. And you want to talk about negatives, Hillary Clinton is the highest negatives of any Democrat right now. She's a known quantity. There's not much room for her to grow as a candidate, whereas Donald Trump could, in fact, come out from behind the screen and appear even more presidential than he has so far. That is, even last night, his bluster was much less. He stopped calling him Lion Ted Cruz, called him Senator Cruz last night. So
if that's
not
our standard for presidential, we should just give up the Republic.
I think we had Andrew Jackson, who reminds me a lot of Donald Trump. So if that's the standard, I'm not supporting anyone. I'm just saying I got to be the counter
to Tim's point, last summer when people said his negatives are too high to win even a single state in a primary, he has grown and at least pulled some of his negatives down on his party side. Question is, can he do it for the general? He's at least done it on his side, and we've been wrong. All five phone lines are lit up, so the last 6 minutes or so with Tim Nealon from Nazareth, Sean Sutton from RIT, your phone calls, and we'll keep it going. Dan in Rochester. Go ahead, Dan.
Am I on?
Yes, go ahead, Dan.
Okay, I have a question. What in New York State would have to change, and how would it be done so that independents could also participate in the primaries? I mean, I have a number of friends that back Bernie, but now are saying that they would never vote for Hillary. I mean, they would vote for Trump, and to me, that's going to the opposite side of the stadium. You know. Because they feel they were shut out because they were independents. I guess so. My question is, how can it change in this state so that independents could participate in the primary vote?
Dan, thanks for the phone call. I think what we're finding out from our guests is it's not likely to change here. It's probably going to stay a closed primary, right?
Yeah, I'd say it's going to stay a closed primary.
Yeah, but what would have to take is the parties would have to agree that they would create an open primary, and then they would just have to change the election law as is written now. I mean, a lot of this, again, it comes down to a legislative aspect of this. But, of course, the parties are the parties in power. The two major parties are the ones that are running the government. So you have to somehow convince your elected officials to open it up. I mean, there's a gamut of things we would like to see in New York State election law changed, including same-day registration and voting and some other keen things like that. You want to talk about that kind of thing, that could also happen. Maybe what we need, you know, is more pressure by these independents on elected officials to make these changes and to get the parties to see, again, as their numbers go up and down over time, you know, they may become more open to changing. And the only way parties change is by losing elections, frankly.
I keep going back and forth, by the way. I mean, I really think that New York State does make it hard to vote with that such an early registration deadline. But at the same time, can we get a little bit more engaged in our civics that we at least know if we're registered? You know, I do think that's valuable. You know, I have sympathy on both sides of this argument. And I also, to Dan's point about having friends who are Bernie supporters who are going to vote for Trump, when I hear from Clinton supporters who say Bernie and his supporters are not even Democrats, that's what they're talking about. They're saying, you're going to go vote for Donald Trump? Yeah. And that's baffling to Hillary Clinton supporters, because you do not hear Hillary Clinton supporters saying that about Donald Trump. It's an interesting situation. I'm not saying most Bernie supporters are saying
that. No, but some. But again, I think two sides of the same coin. They're both in some ways populist, and they're both driving a message of economic decline, and we need to change the system. And, you know, Hillary's message is she can do it. She has done it. But, of course, she's an establishment candidate, so she's not going to appeal to those people who want an outsider.
All right, let's keep it moving quickly. Christine in Canandaigua next up. Go ahead, Christine.
Bernie should stay in because it's not over until it's over.
Simple as that?
Simple as that.
Well, Christine, thanks for the phone call. And a lot of Bernie's supporters are saying exactly that. Not only do they want to see him push the issues and discussion, but they think, why quit? I mean, if there's a mathematical chance, Ted Cruz is now eliminated from clinching a nomination. Bernie Sanders is not. He'd have to win around 70% of the remaining delegates. Christine says, stay in it. Law in Rochester. Go ahead, Law.
Hey, I wanted to know, there's a little groundswell of people already saying that if Bernie didn't get the nomination, that he should run independent. I'm wondering what the thoughts are of what that would do to a Hillary, a Hillary candidacy if he really ran independent.
Thank you, Law. She would lose, right?
I think so. I think she would lose.
And so would he.
Yeah.
If Hillary's a Democratic nominee and Bernie runs as an independent, they both lose.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree. Yeah. It's absolutely. Yeah. They draw votes away, and then the Republicans would get the plurality of votes in the state.
Unless, now let's get crazy here. There's an open convention in Cleveland, the Republicans, Trump ends up with 1,236 delegates, one delegate short, and they take the nomination away from him on the third ballot or so, and they give it to John Kasich, or they give it to somebody who they think is the adult in the room, and Trump decides he's going to run as an independent. So now you've got Trump plus the Republican nominee, Sanders plus the Democratic nominee, and then it's all bad.
Then it goes to the House of Representatives. And the House will boot it somewhere else because they haven't decided an election since, again, Andrew Jackson. They gave it to John Quincy Adams. And then after that, they had a special commission in 1876. And then luckily for them, the Supreme Court took the decision away in 2000. So they are sweating bullets. The House does not want to have to decide this because no one will be happy with their elected official.
All right. Well, Sean Sutton, 20 seconds. What's the biggest headline that – what did we learn yesterday based on the New York State primary?
We learned that New York-based candidates will win.
Which might not have been a surprise.
That Ted Cruz doesn't travel well, east and north of the Mason-Dixon line.
Yeah, and we're probably going to find out even more about that phenomenon with Ted Cruz next Tuesday when five Northeast states vote. Tim Nealon, 20 seconds. Any surprises for you yesterday?
No surprises, though. I'd keep an eye on Pennsylvania. They elected Rick Santorum, so maybe Ted Cruz will do pretty well in Pennsylvania.
All right, next Tuesday. It's a big day. We're getting a little bit more clarity on the race. And our thanks to Ken Rudin, political junkie, joining us in the first half hour, flooded with phone calls and comments. Got as many of them in as we could. Thanks for all the great participation from our listeners. Sean Sutton, the chair of the Department of Political Science at RIT. Always nice to see you, sir. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Tim Nealon, chair of the Department of History and Political Science at Nazareth College. Tim, nice to see you as well.
Always fun being here.
All right, short break. Have you seen Cowspiracy? We're talking about it next.